it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
Welcome back, everybody. It's hour two, Toker Talk Radio, coming to you live from scorching Scottsdale, Arizona. What is the temperature out there right now? I'll check the phone, see what it tells me. I know it's over 100. I just want to know how much over. Oh, the phone's not going to tell me? Is that the way we're going to be today? Giving me the weather in Flint, because this weekend I will be in Flint, Michigan for the Cannabis Cup, and that will be at the Clio Auto City Speedway. So I hope to see you out there. It also means that there won't be a live show on Friday, because it's my travel day on Friday. So we'll get you a live show tomorrow, and then we'll be off Friday as I make my way to Clio, Michigan. And then after that weekend in Michigan, I'll be in New York for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at the Javits Center for the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo. And then from Michigan on that Thursday, I fly to San Francisco and will be at the Cal Palace for the Northern California Cannabis Cup. I'll also be presenting at that one, so hope to see you there. And then following that weekend on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Oakland, California, the 20th through the 22nd, will be the National Cannabis Industry Association Expo. So I'll be out at that. And then starting on the 24th, I'm taking the rest of June off, because June 24th is my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. That's right. They've been married for 50 years. And in some news, my mom asked me to officiate a vow renewal ceremony for them. So I have now become a minister. Yes, I went to the Universal Life Church and I signed up to become an ordained minister in the Universal Life Church. Now, this is one of them online, you know, minister mills, right? It's not like it's a brick and mortar church anywhere. And it's not like they have any one specific dogma. In fact, they recognize all sorts of faiths. There are flying spaghetti monster ministers, and there are Jedi ministers, and they got pagans and druids, and then all the standard ones too. They got the Christians and the Buddhists and the Islam and Judaism and so on. So it's really open for anybody. And you can also get yourself an honorary doctorate of divinity. So I think I'm going to do that as well. So that henceforth, I shall be known as the Reverend Dr. Radical Russ Belleville. Yeah. My religion? Well, it should be obvious, right? Rastafarianism. Rastafarianism. That's right. A religion of one. Anyway, let's get to what I consider the most cannabinoid headline of the year, if not the decade. This is the headline from the Associated Press. Room of pot goes up in smoke in fire at home on High Street. Normally, I don't like the pop pun headline, you know, something goes up in smoke, but here it's not a pun. There was literally smoke. So it did literally go up in smoke, right? And there was a fire, and it was a room full of pot in a house on High Street. So the Wayne County Sheriff's Office were called to the home at 5 a.m. Tuesday. Smoke coming from a locked office upstairs. 40 to 50 potted marijuana plants under grow lights in the room. Fire started, believed to be started, by an electrical malfunction. Man who lives there was charged with misdemeanor count of unlawful growing of marijuana plants. Oh, what a shame. All right, when we come back, we're going to tell you a little bit about Sheldon Adelson, what the Nevada billionaire has been up to lately to fight weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
Dr. Dabber, hurry. Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Chronicling the latest cannabis industry news and headlines.
Well, with four states with tax and regulate and the District of Columbia.
The state of cannabis.
Oh my God, it's refreshing. We have people that generally wouldn't speak on behalf of cannabis for fear of retribution, fear of losing your practices, fear of many of those things, and find ourselves in a place that we finally can.
Bringing you fact-based news and views and keeping listeners on the pulse of what's happening in the industry today. The State of Cannabis. On demand anytime, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Just about 9 after the hour, and I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Nevada. Now, you know, Nevada's got marijuana legalization on the ballot. This is kind of flying under the radar for some people, but they will vote this fall on marijuana legalization in Nevada. Now, I've got some problems with a little bit of this marijuana legalization initiative, primarily that it's got the odious 25-mile halo rule that says you can't home grow marijuana if you live within 25 miles of a licensed pot shop. In other words, a city. You can't grow if you live in a city. Let's just be clear about that. But still, marijuana legalization that allows consumers, what I'm looking for is a test, right? I've got this series of tests, and it's in order of priority. Number one, can I have marijuana? Like, can I have it and smoke it and not get busted for it, not be harassed for it, not be ticketed for it, not be searched for it, not have any suspicion that I'm up to anything illegal, not have to give it up to a cop who catches me with it? Can I have it? Can I smoke pot? That's the number one thing that has to exist. That's the deal breaker. If that doesn't exist, there's no point in talking about the rest of it. Number two, can I buy pot? Right? Not much use being able to have it if you got no way to get it. got to be some way for you to be able to buy pot. Number three, can I grow pot? Now, two and three are kind of, you got to have one of the two of those. I've either got to have a place to buy the pot or you got to let me grow the pot. I personally would prefer a place to buy the pot because I think more people, more consumers are served by that. I think there's that most people are not good growers and don't want to grow. So by just the slightest of margins, I put that as number two. Can I buy pot ahead of number three? Can I grow pot? That was a little bit of the decision-making process that got me to supporting Washington's I-502. Now, that's not to say that the home grow isn't important. It is important. Home grow, as Keith Stropp has always said, is the mechanism by which we constrain corporations and governments into providing high-quality, low-priced marijuana. If your weed sucks or it costs too much, we'll just grow our own, right? And here's the other thing as to why can I buy it is ahead of can I grow it, because we're growing it now. It's already illegal now to grow it, right? So if you're a consumer who wants to have marijuana and wants to grow marijuana, you've been able to do that legally for a while. Having to buy marijuana is a little tougher to come by because you got to find a guy and there's no selection. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying that the legality of being able to purchase opens up so much more for so many more than the legality of being able to grow. So that's my three in a row, right? Can I have it and smoke it? Can I buy it? And the corollary of that, can I sell it, right? And that's not an unimportant corollary because, you know, that was part of the problem with the Ohio thing is too many people thought they wouldn't be able to sell it. But anyway, number one, can I have it, use it, possess it? Number two, can I buy it? Number three, can I grow it? Number four, can I be treated equally? Now, number four is not a deal breaker. Number four is just something that enhances or detracts from the overall vote for these things. When you think about the progress on major civil rights issues, it takes a long time. You know, we didn't jump from the Emancipation Proclamation to interracial marriage to electing a black president all within the 19th century, right? It took 160 years. So you don't reject the Emancipation Proclamation just because it doesn't include interracial marriage. You don't reject a civil rights victory if it's not perfect. You take the good. You take as much of the good as you can. So in the case of something like Washington's I-502, number one was fulfilled. I can have and smoke marijuana. Number two was fulfilled. I can buy marijuana. Number three was not fulfilled. I can't grow marijuana. And number four was actually a detriment. I was treated less equally after I-502 because of the imposition of a 5 nanogram per se DUID, to which there's no equivalent for alcohol drinkers. But because I had one and two, even though three and four were neutral and bad, one and two were positive and good, and I had to go for it. So we've got this initiative in, I kind of went on a tangent here, because we got this initiative in Nevada that's got that 25-mile halo. And I was just trying to say, even as bad as that is, it's not like I'm going to say no, vote against legalization in Nevada. Okay, so obviously, being able to possess marijuana in Nevada, being able to buy it in a shop on the strip, even, and you know some casinos are going to get into this action somehow. They're going to set up some sort of room. I believe this will happen. There'll be some sort of room you can go to where you can smoke weed and gamble. They're going to get that figured out. Maybe not soon. But anyway, so Nevadans will be voting on marijuana legalization, and the lead paper, newspaper in Las Vegas is the Las Vegas Review Journal. And for years, the Las Vegas Review Journal has been good on this issue. When we look back until as recently as December, and this is great reporting, Tom Angel from marijuana.com says that even back in December, it criticized the Postal Service for threatening newspapers that print ads for cannabis businesses. You know, that deal that came out of Oregon, right? Where they said, hey, look, if you you send a magazine through the mail that's got ads for Schedule I substances, you could be committing a federal felony. And in December, the Las Vegas Review-Journal said that's bullshit. In November, they said that presidential candidates should endorse the removal of marijuana from Schedule 1, saying it's an important and long overdue to start changing the costly trajectory of our failed war on drugs. In another piece, they wrote, marijuana is mainstream and there's no turning back. Back in 2002, we're talking 14 years ago, before any state had ever legalized, Nevada had legalization on the ballot in 2002. The Review Journal wrote that it would give voters, quote, an opportunity to bring sanity to the state's overly burdensome drug enforcement policy and would end the needless harassment of individuals who peacefully and privately use marijuana, including seriously ill patients who should have some legal protection, not to mention peace of mind, because they're covered by the medical marijuana program, end quote. In a piece from last year, they said, this editorial page has long supported the decriminalizing, regulating, and taxing the sale of currently illegal drugs. This position is taken not only because of the supreme cost related to policing, prosecuting, and incarcerating drug offenders, not to mention the tragic and preventable cost in human lives, but also due to the inescapable fact that no amount of government pressure has ever reduced demand for illegal drugs in the United States. In fact, it has done the exact opposite. End quote. Great newspaper, right? Fantastic editorial board, major American city newspaper calling for the decriminalization of all drugs, the legalization of marijuana, the support for medical marijuana, insisting that the federal government back off of its prosecution of marijuana. And then Sheldon Adelson comes in. Sheldon Adelson has purchased the paper. Sheldon Adelson purchased this newspaper back in December. Now, Adelson is the operator of the Sands Casino in Las Vegas and one of the richest people on earth. He's not only against legalizing marijuana, he's against legalizing medical marijuana. He was the guy that contributed $4.5 million to the campaign against Florida's medical marijuana just 2 years ago, helping to defeat that measure. So what has happened lately? Well, Sheldon Adelson bought the paper and then took the editorial board to visit a drug treatment facility. And so now it has issued the following statement. An editorial in today's Las Vegas Review Journal says, quote,
legalizing weed would jeopardize the health of countless Nevadans, expose more people to drug abuse and addiction, put excessive stress on the state's healthcare facilities, and do little to relieve the state's bloated prison population. End quote.
Wow. A complete flip-flop. A 100%, 180-degree flip-flop. A complete repudiation of every editorial they've ever written on this subject after getting bought out by a billionaire. When they were collecting signatures for this very initiative, the editorial board said, quote, it's an important step forward in fixing a failed policy. If you're presented with the petition and you're a registered voter, sign it. They also said, as with gay marriage, public opinion has shifted on recreational marijuana. Polls show a majority of Americans recognize the futility of prohibition and would rather see governments collect taxes on the sale of the drug. Yeah. And they get bought out by this conservative billionaire. And the next thing you know, it's going to jeopardize the health of Nevadans. Drug abuse, addiction, stress on the healthcare. A complete flip-flop. I don't know how you guys working at the Review Journal can manage to sleep at night or to have any measure lacking. You're just lacking any measure of integrity in this situation. You just don't want to get fired. You don't want to lose your jobs. What good was your editorial policy before if it can just be switched with the introduction of a new owner? And we're not talking about him firing the previous editorial staff and bringing in new people that are anti-pot. These are the same editors, the same writers, the same editorial board. Shame on them. Shame on them for their flip-flop.
Maybe we should start at 420, right? Marijuana reference.
All right. Thank you, Homer, because it is 420 right here in Scottsdale, Arizona, where the temperature is 106 degrees. We're going to take a break and try to stay cool. Got a safety meeting we got to get to. Hope your safety meeting goes well. Stick around. We're back in 2 minutes.
We have your smoking section right here. This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
The cannabis industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to The Russ Belville Show is.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Yar, thar be pirates here. Har, 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 har.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour, and we are back here at Cannabis Radio in Scottsdale, Arizona. Got another day here tomorrow, and then Friday we'll be flying out for another extended road trip. I'll be out for the rest of the month. Yeah, people ask me where I'm from. Where are you based? They'll say, where are you based? And I'll say, the United States. Because really, this month, this year, since... I'm going to say February, beginning of February. I don't think I've spent an entire week in one place. I'm trying to think, but I don't think I've been in one place for an entire week. Maybe Portland over a 10-day period, maybe. But not much. I'm pretty much living on the road, folks. Hey, other updates. Don't forget, coming up at the top of the hour, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. The latest episode, brand new episode of the Tommy Chong podcast is right here exclusively on CannabisRadio.com. Tommy Chong and his son, Paris Chong, talking about the issues that matter to the cannabis community, coming up on the Tommy Chong podcast. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. Not 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock is Stoner Jesus. Oh, I feel terrible. I said 5 o'clock in the first hour. 5 o'clock is Stoner Jesus live. And then 6 o'clock is the Tommy Chong podcast. 6 o'clock Pacific and 9 o'clock Eastern time. Stoner Jesus and then Tommy Chong to wind up your hump day. We're closing in on the National Cannabis Industry Association event as well. And just got a message from Coleco wanting to set up some interviews. We'll get that set up for you, Coleco. Hope you're listening out there. I also got to talk a little bit about the about the primaries yesterday. We're going to go a little off the warpath here, talk a little politics outside of the marijuana world. And of course, yesterday was the final Super Tuesday with 6 states to vote. The last gasp effort for the Bernie Sanders campaign to come through big, and it just didn't happen. Hillary Clinton won California, 57% that she won California? And she also ended up winning New Mexico, South Dakota, and New Jersey. And New Jersey was expected. I was a little surprised by South Dakota and New Mexico, to be honest. I thought those would turn up. And they were close. They were like 51-49s, so they were really close anyway. And then Bernie won Montana and North Dakota, which wasn't surprising at all. And this puts the point where Hillary Clinton has, you know, clinched enough pledged delegates that she's got the majority of them. So there's no Democratic reason for the superdelegates to overturn the will of the voters. It's not like they both came in without the majority. They, you know, she's got the majority. She's won more states. She's won more primaries, won more caucuses. You know, everything that she needed to do, she's done. And we could talk about, you know, the unfairness, the impropriety, the thumb on the scales by Debbie Wasserman Schultz when it comes to this. But, you know, you can complain about the refs, but you still got to win the game, right? And I'm afraid Bernie just hasn't won the game. And now making this play that he, you know, the play that he was making was that, you know, had he won 5 out of 6 of those last contests and won California especially, then there's a case to be made that, hey, look, I got the momentum and I poll better against Trump. So you ought to, you know, this, and this is what superdelegates were made for, was to protect the Democratic Party from nominating a weak candidate because the candidate does well in the primaries but would do lousy in the general. And that's exactly what Hillary Clinton is. So that was a case I was behind. I was behind that as the last gasp effort. That's something I could get behind. But now, without winning California, and not only to lose California, had it been close, had it been 51-49, you could possibly still make that argument. But man, 57-43, that's a 14-point loss. That's hard. You know, that's a pretty strong exclamation point. Hard to make the case that you need to overturn the will of the voters in this case. Now, Bernie is soldiering on, and I believe he's soldiering on to have an impact over the party platform, over the selection of a vice presidential candidate. There's some rumors going around about it being Elizabeth Warren, how Majority Leader Harry Reid would really like to see it be Elizabeth Warren. You know, you put Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren on a ticket together, and come October, if there is an indictment against Hillary, then I could get behind that ticket with the idea that she'd have to drop out and Elizabeth Warren would have to take over. I could accept that. That would be great. But the way I see it is that the Democrats have given us a nominee who's pro-war, pro-Wall Street, pro-death penalty, pro-free trade, pro-fracking, pro-regime change, pro-corporations, pro-super PACs, pro-government secrecy, a candidate who launders foreign money for arms deals and uranium speculators, who moves PAC money to buy superdelegates, who requires evolving to support basic human rights for gay people, who needs more research on medical marijuana, and someone who's just barely coming around to not supporting the mass incarceration of so-called super predators. And I'm sorry, I can't get on board with that. I can't put my mark next to her name as my permission to act in my name to someone who's got that sort of background and sort of record. I'm sorry. I mean, I'll gladly acknowledge that Hillary's good on women's issues, unless, of course, they're Saudi Arabian women, but, you know, they've got the oil. So, and yeah, sure, Hillary's great on children's issues. She created the Children's Health Insurance Program. That's great. Great on the children's issues. And unless, of course, they're, you know, a Syrian kid getting drone bombed or a Syrian refugee kid drowning or something, right? And look, I'm proud that America could be transferring power from the first black president to the first woman president. That's great. Even if it was preordained by having Hillary's 2008 campaign director running the party's election process to the benefit of Hillary. I can even accept that she's got an accomplished resume. She's certainly qualified resume-wise, even approved by Henry Kissinger and Dick Cheney. I mean, so clearly she's got the bona fides. But I'm sorry, I just can't put my name on the side of the woman who enabled a Honduran coup to overturn a democratically elected government, who slashed the Haitian minimum wage from they were going to raise it to 64 cents an hour. She had it, got it cut down to 31 cents an hour to help her corporate friends there. She gleefully enjoys killing other heads of state. Remember her little giggle about Gaddafi? We came, we saw, he died. I mean, she's coddled the Wall Street criminals. She's in their pocket for $225,000 a speech. She slut-shamed Monica Lewinsky and every other one of Bill Clinton's sexual assault victims who's spoken out against it. She laughed about once freeing a child rapist back when she was a lawyer. She was on Walmart's board of directors, didn't do a whole lot to fix Walmart's corporate culture or treatment of women. She hides her work at state from Freedom of Information Act requests by risking national security with a home email server for convenience. I mean, this is a lady who flip-flops more than a trout on a riverbank. I just can't get behind her. And this whole thing just reeks to me. You know, this whole election process just reeks to me. I mean, my tinfoil hat tells me that Donald Trump was just manufactured by the Clintons so she could have an opponent she could actually beat. I don't know. I think Donald's ego is a little too big for that, but who knows? I mean, I'm reminded this whole election, this whole thing now, you know, Democrats are saying, oh, we've got to unite and get behind Hillary and mend the fractured Democratic Party. Look, folks, a lot of us who are Bernie supporters were never in the Democratic Party. There's no fracture because we are not part of your piece of glass. We were on the outside. We only came to the Democratic Party because you finally nominated one. Or finally had one running, I should say. You finally had a Democrat running. A Democrat in the model of FDR. A Democrat who actually stands up for the people against the wealthy interests. Who stands up for labor against management. Who stands up for the poor and the sick against the wealthy and the powerful. So yeah, healing the Democratic Party would be to bring us in. Try and bring us in here. And you're not going to do it by threatening us. There was a cover of the National Lampoon in 1973, National Lampoon magazine, had a dog on the cover and a hand from coming out of frame with a gun up against the dog's head. The dog's looking sideways at the gun. And the cover reads, "If you don't buy this magazine, we'll kill this dog." Well, in this metaphor, Trump is the gun and the dog is America. And we're told by the DNC, vote for Hillary or the dog gets it. Well, no. I won't. And I won't be extorted with the threats of President Trump and his two or three Supreme Court picks either. I mean, look at it like this. If Trump is supposed to be the most horrible, out of his depth, racist, criminal, loser, asshole, huckster ever to sit in the Oval Office, if we're supposed to be afraid that that's the situation, oh my God, there'll be terrible, terrible results if Trump is president, then how is it that the Congress and the people are just going to sit idly by while he rampages through Washington? See, I lived through the first President Clinton, and I seem to recall the government itself being shut down and the president being impeached over a blowjob. Something that didn't affect his work whatsoever. Hell, you could make the argument it may have made his work easier. So you want me to believe that the Congress could get together to put together articles of impeachment over lying over a blowjob, but they'd be powerless to stop the rampaging Trump? Really? Hell, Trump's got enough on his background already to qualify as high crimes and misdemeanors worthy enough of impeachment. The Republicans already don't like him, and the longer he stays in office spouting off his racist tirades, the worse the GOP brand becomes, especially as America keeps becoming younger, browner, and more female. So they're not going to want him around for very long if he continues to destroy the brand. And we all know the Democrats aren't going to want him around. Are you trying to tell me that between the Democratic and the Republican leadership, they couldn't actually come up with articles of impeachment to get rid of a terrible Trump? Hell, this Trump University case may be enough. And imagine if Trump's in for just 2 years, and in 2018, America is so pissed off and fed up with Trump that they elect a Democratic Congress, both House and Senate. And they start to turn some of those state houses Democratic as well. And imagine that by 2020, we get that new census, and this Democratic Congress and these Democratic state houses can start redrawing some of those House boundaries that the Republicans gerrymandered in 2010 and in 2000. I mean, after 2 years of Trump, we could end up with a Democratic Congress, Democratic House, and then impeach that bastard. End up with whoever his vice presidential pick. And that might be, this will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see who Trump picks as a vice president. Because, like, I have to think that he's going to pick somebody to act as insurance against impeaching him. Like, who could Trump pick that would make people think, yeah, we could get rid of Trump, but then we'd be left with... who would that be? You know, Sarah Palin comes to mind, but I don't know who else would really work in that position. Let's bring Sarah back out of mouthballs. Wouldn't that be fun? The Trump Palin ticket. Let's do that. That'll be great. And imagine after that big electoral drubbing that we get around. And the other thing, too, is that Donald Trump is a blowhard, but he doesn't know shit about government. So Donald Trump's just going to be an empty suit for whatever handlers he gets in there into the White House. And if the Republican Party has any control over how that unfolds, then what we end up with Trump is more like another Reagan, a figurehead, a speaker, and not some sort of evil villain that's going to try to take down America. Now, there's a lot of bad things that happened during the Reagan years, I'll admit, but there were some good things too. But imagine that Trump being there and taking at their prediction that Trump will be this terrible, awful blight on America. Then come 2020, after that 2018 electoral referendum with the Democratic House and Democratic Senate, and then come 2020, the Democrats nominate somebody good like Elizabeth Warren. Imagine the Republicans having to face a 2020 election with an even browner, even younger, even less Republican demographic in 2020 than already. After 4 years of Trump alienating all those groups. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised to see Trump not run for re-election. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Republicans primary him if they don't go as far as impeaching him in his first term, which I think would be likely. Now, when we talk about this stuff, when you talk about this, the Democrats have a Trump card, literally a Trump card. And that is that they keep saying, well, you know, Hillary's not Trump. You know, I can't point to how great she's going to be, but she's just not going to be as bad as Trump. And when we question that, when we say, no, look, I'm not going to vote for Hillary, but I'm also not going to vote for Trump. I'll vote for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, or I'll write in Bernie Sanders. As soon as you bring that up, the Democratic blackmailers will evoke the specter of Ralph Nader. You don't want to be Ralph Nader, do you? You don't want to Nader this election. Remember the people that said Gore and Bush were no different, so they voted for Nader, and look what happened. Gore ended up losing the election, even though he had more popular votes, because Nader stole all those Florida votes. Bush won Florida by 537 votes. If Nader hadn't been there, my God, all those people would have voted for, they would have voted for Al Gore, and he'd have been president, blah, 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 blah. Such a convenient scapegoat Ralph Nader is. It's always interesting to me how Democrats can scapegoat the third-party candidate that costs their candidate the election, but they won't address that their candidate just sucked. We're seeing it now with Hillary Clinton. She's just a candidate that sucks. Too much baggage, not enough charisma. She's a candidate that sucks. And so because of that, she ends up making the election closer than it should actually be. And because of that, then third parties have an outsized role in how the election might fare. The same thing went for Al Gore. Al Gore was a lousy candidate. Al Gore was wooden and stiff. You remember all the jokes about robot Al Gore. And God, yeah, I wish he would have won. Actually, I wish the Supreme Court would have selected him in 2000. Would have been better off than what we got with George W. Bush. We'd have made some progress on climate change. We wouldn't have had the Iraq War, most likely. People in New Orleans wouldn't have had to wait for days before being rescued from floodwaters. Yada, yada, yada. Yes, I get all that. But when you say that Ralph Nader cost Gore the election in 2000, it ignores a lot of salient points. Number one, Al Gore lost his home state of Tennessee. He lost his own damn state. If you can't win your own state, you're not a very good candidate. And had he won Tennessee, Florida is irrelevant. He'd have had remember, there's only five electoral votes that separated him. It was like 273 to 268, wasn't it? Something like that. Five EVs. Gore also lost Bill Clinton's home state of Arkansas. And again, had he had Arkansas, Florida doesn't even matter. And then when you look at the Florida election totals, remember, Gore lost by 537 votes in Florida. Every third party that ran in Florida got more than 537 votes. So why blame Nader? Why not blame Moorhead from the Workers of the World Party, or the socialist who ran, who got 1,800 votes, or the Democratic socialist who ran and got 560 votes? Why are they not to blame? And then there were 200,000 Democrats in Florida who voted for Bush. Al Gore couldn't even get his own Democrats in Florida to vote for him. You want to blame it on Nader? And then once the election got thrown to the courts, the Gore team blew it in the courts. He blew it in the recounts by calling only for some counties to be recounted and ignoring overvotes. And that's where the Supreme Court was able to step in and say, hey, hold on, it's not being fair to everyone, and choose the election for Gore. And let's not forget how the real person to blame for George W. Bush is Bill Clinton. More specifically, Bill Clinton's dick. Bill Clinton poisoned the electoral waters with that stupid blowjob scandal. Got the government locked up for 2 years. See, I don't blame Bill Clinton for the attacks the Republicans made against him throughout his career, or any of the other sorts of politics, but this was something under his control. He didn't have to diddle an intern in the Oval Office. In a situation where the Congress already wanted his head on a spike, to take such a foolish, selfish risk to give them that ammunition, the ammunition necessary to grind the government to a halt and begin impeachment proceedings and basically poison the electoral waters for Al Gore. And not only that, made it so, you know, set the frame of you got to understand, Bill Clinton was like the first boomer president, right? The first young president we'd had in a while. It had been Bush Sr. and Reagan before that. And so there was this kind of this new generation, the post, the Vietnam generation kind of coming in. And, you know, Bill Clinton playing sax on Arsenio Hall and all that, and all of his bimbo eruptions from before, Jennifer Flowers and all those things, that the whole frame was set for the Democrats being this hedonistic party, you know, sex thing going on. That got so set in the frame that at the Democratic convention, Al Gore comes up on stage after getting the nomination and plants this big, uncomfortably sloppy French kiss on his wife to prove, see, I'm a real man who loves my wife. I'm not going to be getting blowjobs in the Oval Office. I love my wife. That one scene, that was like Dukakis in the tank, man. It was just, you knew it was over for Gore. And then because of that, because the frame was set that way, for the rest of the campaign, Gore, an incumbent vice president who was incumbent over a great economy, low unemployment, relative peace and prosperity, the introduction of a new industry, the internet, that he legitimately can claim a lot of credit for helping create. And all the jokes about Al Gore invented the internet, no, but Al Gore had a whole hell of a lot to do with shepherding the internet through the Congress when it was in its infancy. But he couldn't run on any of that. He couldn't run on any of the successes of the Clinton administration or his own political background, because the whole frame of the whole election had to do with a sloppy stain on a blue dress. So don't tell me Nader cost the election for Al Gore. Bill Clinton's dick and Al Gore himself cost the election for Al Gore. All right, so I've gone off the warpath a little too long. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll find some marijuana stuff to talk about. And I think throughout the rest of the year, you're going to hear us talking a lot about the Gary Johnson, Bill Weld ticket. I got my disagreements with libertarians on a lot of things, but one of the things I like about libertarians is they're consistent, intellectually and logically consistent. I disagree with their premises in some cases, but at least they're consistent. And Gary Johnson, I know the man personally. I've met him personally. I've interviewed him a number of times. I trust that he's an honest man, and I trust that he's got our nation's best interests at heart. Don't know if he gets my vote over a Bernie write-in. We'll see. I got time.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
The National Cannabis Industry Association presents the third annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. The most influential business event in the marijuana industry returns for 3 days in Oakland, California. Join your fellow industry leaders and policy influencers June 20th through 22nd for an in-depth educational experience and network with more than 3,000 cannabis professionals. The 2016 Cannabis Business Summit and Expo will feature keynote presentations from California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom and NUMMI Organic Tea CEO Ahmed Rahim, giving you insight into cutting-edge policy discussions and the most innovative business practices. All this, plus the most comprehensive expo floor in the industry. The Cannabis Business Summit and Expo, June 20th through 22nd in Oakland. Don't miss out. Register right now at CannabisBusinessSummit.com and save 15% off registration using promo code RADIO15. That's CannabisBusinessSummit.com, promo code RADIO15.
We love the air.
I'm Radical Russ Belville, inviting you to join me every weekday on CannabisRadio.com for the Russ Belville Show. It's the NPR of POT. We bring you the latest marijuana headlines, cannabis analysis, drug war data, activist interviews, radical rants, and your live calls. Join me every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, live only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I do not like them, Sam. I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Get.buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 50 after the hour. You're just 10 minutes away from the next episode of the Stoner Jesus Show coming to you live on CannabisRadio.com. You get yourself an hour of Stoner Jesus, and then at 6 o'clock... the Tommy Chong Podcast. New episode of Tommy and Paris Chong discussing the latest in the cannabis community. So stay tuned for the next 2 hours. Great programming coming up here on CannabisRadio.com. In the marijuana news, a couple of bills to talk about. Today, the Louisiana governor, John Bel Edwards, signed a bill protecting medical marijuana patients from prosecution. It's SB 180. And it's an exemption from prosecution for medical marijuana patients that are using cannabidiol oil. It will become effective on August 1st for any state-sanctioned patient participating in Louisiana's medical marijuana program. Read it, minor child. Yeah. It's one of these pediatric-type things. And we're also hoping that SB 271... another bill that has been proposed will go forth as well. So good stuff in Louisiana, protection for medical marijuana patients. Mostly we're talking about the kids under the CBD oil. We'll keep you posted on that. Also in Ohio, the medical marijuana law has been signed. Governor John Kasich has signed the medical marijuana bill into law. Signed without comment. And it goes into effect 90 days after it's filed with the Secretary of State. So that should be within the next week or two. And so that puts legal medical marijuana in Ohio sometime around September. In September, what will happen is an affirmative defense will go into effect to protect against possession charges if they have permission from their doctor to use marijuana. It will still be probably a year or more before there's an actual dispensary in operation. So we're talking, 2017, maybe even 2018 before dispensaries exist in Ohio. Now, Cleveland.com says it's the 25th state to pass a comprehensive medical marijuana program, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. I still got to follow up on this Louisiana thing, see whether they're counting Louisiana or not. It's going to be regulated by the Ohio State Pharmacy Board, the State Medical Marijuana, or the State Medical Board, and the Department of Commerce. There'll be protection for HIV/AIDS, Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, Alzheimer's, cancer, CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, seizure disorder, fibromyalgia, glaucoma, hepatitis C, IBS, MS, pain that is either chronic and severe, or intractable. Parkinson's disease, post-traumatic stress, sickle cell anemia, spinal cord disease, Tourette's syndrome, traumatic brain injury, and ulcerative colitis. And it does appear as if they are not considering Louisiana in this list. Okay. And last year, and this is great that Kasich has signed this law, because last year Kasich had said that medical marijuana wasn't the answer for Ohioans suffering untreatable seizures and other debilitating diseases. And over the period of his presidential run, his stance started to soften on this. And I think this is happening for a lot of these candidates, is that they're starting to recognize that there's 80% support for medical marijuana, 80 to 90% support for medical marijuana, and that support for or the opposition of medical marijuana doesn't bring with it any tangible benefits, right? Like, even though a majority of people support legalization of marijuana now, there's tangible benefits for opposing it, right? You got your prison guards and your, you know, cops, mostly the cops, the law enforcement, is a pretty powerful lobby that's against legalization of marijuana. So even though your voters are for it, you as a politician can be against it because you're going to benefit in the campaign donations and the lobbying that's done from law enforcement's perspective. But with medical marijuana, the law enforcement opposition to it is, it's still kind of there, but it's really half-hearted these days, especially when we talk about these medical marijuana laws that don't allow for home grow, and especially that don't allow for smokable plant material. Law enforcement starts to ease its opposition. Law enforcement just wants flower to be illegal so that they can continue to bust people for the smell of weed. That's what it comes down to. So if we legalize pills and sprays and inhalers, they're pretty cool with that. Even the opposition that might have come from Big Pharma and their lobbyists in decades past is waning because of the success of GW Pharmaceuticals in starting to pharmaceuticalize cannabinoid medical products. That's the Box Canyon that we always talk about these states setting themselves up to have these programs that don't allow for people to grow their own medicine. And then once the marijuana becomes as medical as it can be with pills, sprays, and inhalers, it's only a couple of strokes of the pen in the legislature to get the plant material removed from the dispensaries and replaced with all of the, you know, FDA approved Sativex and Epidiolex and all those other products. Hell, don't even keep the dispensaries anymore. Just put that stuff in the pharmacy. Don't even have a medical marijuana program anymore because now it's a Schedule II drug and you can just treat it like you treat OxyContin or anything else you go get a prescription for. That's the Box Canyon, folks, and it's coming. These East Coast and Midwestern medical marijuana programs, you just wait. And it's going to be a fight even in the West Coast states that allow for home grow. Maybe not so much for those that have legalized recreational marijuana. But even that might be a fight coming up. Once marijuana is no longer a Schedule I drug, I mean, cocaine and meth are Schedule II, you still do some pretty serious prison time for having either of those drugs. Well, whatever happens, we'll be here at the Russ Belville Show, keeping an eye on it for you. Stay tuned, because Stoner Jesus is up next. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.